Okay, so you've been worrying about COVID-19 for like 2 years or whatever it is at this point, and now there's this monkeypox thing?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
WHO's Dr. Rosamund Lewis said there are over 250 confirmed and suspected cases of monkeypox in at least 16 countries.
I don't want to freak anyone out here. It's almost certainly not going to be as bad as COVID. It's not particularly new, and we've already got vaccines that can prevent spread. All that being said, no one was asking for another thing to worry about, but here is yet another thing. What in the H-E double hockey sticks is monkeypox, and how are we going to deal with this thing now? I'm Sean Ramos-Firm. That is ahead on Today Explained.
Support for Today Explained comes from Atlassian. Atlassian is obsessed with productivity and suspects that you might be also. Atlassian has 11,000 plus employees around the world, Atlassian tells us, and therefore knows a thing or two about productivity. Doesn't matter if you're a team of 2 people or 2 million people, if you're in the same office, if you're on another continent, Atlassian software such as Jira, Confluence, and Loom keep everyone connected and moving together toward shared goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward travel guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Today Explained. I'm Sean Ramos-Firm. I'm here with Karen Landman, who is a senior reporter on health and science here at Vox and a physician and an epidemiologist. Karen, did I get it all right?
You did, Sean. Great job.
Welcome to the show. The president's talking about monkeypox. The World Health Organization is talking about monkeypox. So it seemed like high time we talk about monkeypox on the show. How worried should the world be about monkeypox, Karen?
First of all, I think we're all primed to worry quite a bit about any new pathogen that we are not used to seeing on the scene here in the US and in Europe. But this is fundamentally a different situation than when COVID came on the scene. This is a smallpox-like illness, but it's not nearly as virulent. It doesn't cause nearly as bad a disease as smallpox did, and it doesn't spread as easily from person to person as smallpox did. So it's not likely to lead to the kind of mass deaths that we saw with COVID-19. So I don't think we would expect to see a whole lot of deaths due to monkeypox in places where we have good access to hospital care. When we see monkeypox in the U.S. or in Europe, it's usually in sporadic cases where it kind of travels with a return traveler from Nigeria or some other place in Central or West Africa where there is a lot of monkeypox circulating either among animals and occasionally in little outbreak situations among people. But we don't usually see the kind of person-to-person spread that we seem to be seeing in Europe and in the United States, leading to the kinds of numbers of cases that we're seeing now.
Italy and Sweden have become the latest countries to confirm cases, following Britain, Portugal, and Spain.
Tonight, a potential case of monkeypox is being investigated at this New York City hospital after the U.S.'s first case of the year was confirmed Wednesday in Massachusetts, a man who'd only recently traveled to Canada.
And we're still not seeing, like, bananas numbers like we do with COVID, right? We're still seeing relatively small numbers of monkeypox?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, as of Tuesday morning, there were 270-odd suspected and confirmed cases of monkeypox worldwide. You know, given the rigor with which various clinics and events where it might have been spread have been doing case finding, that's actually not that high a number. You know, you could imagine, given that there's some probable transmission happening that is not being detected, that it could be a much higher number than that. It could be in the thousands, but we haven't actually seen those numbers turn up yet.
And if I'm understanding you, this has traveled from Africa to Europe and North America. Is that correct?
That's usually the way it moves. Right now, at least one travel-associated case that is part of this outbreak that sort of has happened at the same time as this outbreak, and a whole lot of other cases, most of the other cases, are among gay and bi men, men who have sex with men, many of whom are linked by having been in the same place at the same events at the same time. None of those seem to be linked to the travel cases. So there may have been some transmission that has not yet been detected that sort of does link those two groups of people.
Where was this event?
So there are several events. There was a sauna. That's sort of the European term for a gay bathhouse. So a bathhouse used for adults for sex, usually by queer men. In Spain, that's responsible for most of the cases. There was a gay pride event in the Canary Islands that I believe has been linked to several cases or thought to have been linked to several cases. And also a gay fetish event in Antwerp that's called Darklands, and that has also been linked to several cases. So the people who run those events have already reached out to attendees and done a lot of work to do case finding. But those are some of the events to which and places to which some of these clusters are linked.
You said this is sort of like a smallpox type disease, but now we're talking about it being related to gay sex. Is this sort of like an STD? What's the deal?
I actually talked to John Brooks at the CDC. He's one of the leads in the investigation on this. He said, you know, that what defines an STI, they call it an STI now, sexually transmitted infection, is a disease that requires sex to be transmitted. So gonorrhea and chlamydia are sort of the classic examples of this. But there are also a lot of diseases that do not meet that definition that can be transmitted during the kind of close contact that happens during sex. So like meningitis is an example of that. You know, there have been outbreaks of meningitis among also among gay and bi men just due to the close contact within that community that happens during sex. So not really technically transmitted during the biologically defined sex, but during the close contact that sort of surrounds all of that. If monkeypox is being transmitted during sex, it's more likely just because of the close contact that goes along with sexual activity, not necessarily because of the biological act of intercourse.
What are all the ways monkeypox can spread between people?
Most of the spread happens from contact with the sores. The open sores have a pretty high number of viruses in them, and so they're pretty infectious. It can also be spread through respiratory droplets and possibly aerosols, but John Brooks during the CDC press conference said that usually happens because there are undetected sores in the mouth and throat. And so when somebody, before they have an open sore on their visible skin, may have a sore in their mouth or throat, may cough or breathe heavily around another person and transmit it that way. So really the sores are where the transmission comes from in monkeypox.
Okay, so it's not like COVID-style transmission where, you know, 15 minutes in a closed quarter, you're definitely going to get it or something like that?
Right. No, it's a very different type of transmission. And you're so unlikely to catch this during just casual contact with somebody. So it makes it a lot easier to protect yourself if you are, you know, out and about in the world.
The CDC this morning wants to calm the public fears over how the monkeypox virus is transmitted. The agency emphasizing that it does not spread easily through the air like COVID-19. Monkeypox is primarily spread through sustained physical contact, such as skin-to-skin touch or someone with an active rash.
The kind of contact that you need to have to transmit this really needs to be skin-to-skin or contact with an item that a person's sore has had contact with. So what's unique about this virus compared with many others, including COVID, is that it lives for a long time on surfaces. So there have been cases of transmission, for example, to the person cleaning the bedding of an infected person because they had contact with fluid that leaked from the sores onto that bedding. So, you know, you do need to have contact precautions around somebody that you know to be sick with this in order to prevent transmission. But that's a very different kind of practice than not sharing airspace, as you can imagine.
It could spread through aerosols, just to be clear here, but not nearly as likely as something like COVID.
That's right. And it's just not nearly as likely for this particular pathogen to spread through aerosol as it is to spread through through skin contact.
How long has this disease been around and not, you know, been studied that closely?
Well, good question. Monkeypox was first identified in the late 1950s when it was found to be infecting research animals, which were monkeys, which is why it has its name. But it usually lives in small rodents, usually in West and Central Africa, and is kind of burbled up in small outbreaks, usually chains of maybe 1 to 3 people, usually household members, in that part of the world since then. And only recently, maybe since 2017, have we started to see a whole lot of human-to-human transmission, and that has been in Nigeria primarily.
An 11-year-old boy living in Abuja was infected by the monkeypox disease. He and his family have been quarantined at the Niger Delta University Teaching Hospital.
It kind of started with a big rainfall event that caused both people and animals to flee to higher ground. And so there's just a lot more contact between humans and the animals where this disease more naturally circulates. And there have been more and more transmission events and clusters in Nigeria, such that there have been now 450 human cases in Nigeria. And a lot of those have been spread from humans to humans.
And what are the symptoms like?
So it usually starts with a flu-like illness, you know, some fever, chills, muscle aches, headache. And then with a couple of days, it'll progress to a rash. And that rash looks a lot like chicken pox, which doctors traditionally described as sort of a dewdrop on a rose petal, which means it's
cute.
Kind of a wet-looking but clear blister on a reddened base. And so it'll look like that for a couple of days and then progress to being a more pussy looking blister. Then that'll pop. And then usually within 2 weeks from the onset of the blister, they start to crust over. The infectious period is thought to start with the onset of rash, although there's also some discussion of the possibility that infectivity starts, that someone can be contagious when they start having the fever and, you know, the muscle aches. In part because there may during that period be rash inside the mouth and throat that is not really detected by the person who has it.
Sounds kind of gnarly. Who's most vulnerable here?
Until 2017, we mostly saw bad outcomes among small children and babies, who were also the primary people who got infected with this. So what that portends for us is that people with some level of immunocompromise are at higher risk for a bad outcome from a monkeypox infection, even with this West African, less severe version of monkeypox.
Does it have lasting effects?
It can, of course, if it causes severe disease. You can have outcomes from severe disease, including death. But also even mild disease, if you have substantial rash, it can leave some pretty significant scarring, which can be, you know, a cosmetic problem for some people. And I think what we're learning with COVID, there can be post-viral effects that we have not yet identified. So I think there are some consequences that we know about, and then there are some that we may not yet know about.
Should people be concerned that this could turn into another COVID?
So we're seeing it in places and among a community that actually has a lot of resources to stop its spread.
This is a containable situation, particularly in the countries like where we are seeing these outbreaks that are happening across Europe, in North America as well.
Both the general public and public health have a lot of practice. The general public has a lot of practice washing their hands, washing potentially touched or infected linens or clothes, wearing gloves, wearing masks. I think, you know, masks are a lot less important for preventing transmission here, but contact precautions are something that many of us who had never heard about those things before COVID now know very well. I think we're actually in a pretty good position. But, you know, if there is a whole lot of transmission going on that's undetected, and there are chains of transmission that public health authorities are not able to catch, then, you know, this may become something that kind of burbles at a low level, uncontrolled, in the general population in countries that where it didn't circulate before. That is a possibility. But for it to cause the kind of widespread, severe disease and death that COVID caused, that seems right now unlikely.
How to prevent monkeypox in a minute on Today Explained.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
It's important that we don't try to use an understanding of productivity from the industrial era when people were sitting shoulder to shoulder in a factory setting. When employees are designing their workdays around their most important work, not just reacting to messages and attending meetings, they're more productive.
That's Annie Dean, global head of Team Anywhere at Atlassian. She's leading the mission to empower her 11,000-plus teammates to work from, well, anywhere.
The office isn't dead. It's just not the solution to effective teamwork. Without Team Anywhere, we would probably need about double the amount of office space we have today. And that translates into meaningful annual savings that we can invest in other key company priorities.
Those savings get invested in creating the technology for Atlassian customers, like Jira, Loom, and Confluence.
We believe that this is a more human way to work, and that's something that should be celebrated. One of my favorite things is when 3 o'clock rolls around and my two boys come home from school and they both know that they're allowed to interrupt my meeting to give me a kiss. That's something that I never got when I was in the office every single day.
Learn how Atlassian software helps power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
Support for the show comes from NetSuite. There are a lot of things in life that give you headaches, like seats on an airplane with no legroom. That makes all sorts of parts of my body ache. Or having to pay $10 for a bottle of water at an amusement park. Don't do it, folks. Bring your own. Or just the existence of the DMV. Burn. DMV burn. There's got to be a good DMV out there. Anyway, NetSuite isn't like that. They actually want to help your business by making things simpler. NetSuite is a top-rated cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. That's where they get me personally. According to NetSuite, you can reduce IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required. Access it from everywhere, anywhere. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. You can head to netsuite.com/explained. netsuite.com/explained. netsuite.com/explained.
Marcel, and get this, he's healthy, he's happy, and he's right here in New York filming Outbreak 2, The Virus Takes Manhattan.
You're kidding!
This is amazing.
I know.
I finally get a part on TV, and the monkey's making movies.
Today Explained, Sean Ramaswamy here with Karen Landman, senior reporter on health at Vox. Karen, how do we prevent the spread of monkeypox?
Contact tracing is the start of prevention efforts. Fortunately, there is no known asymptomatic transmission with monkeypox. So that means that in the period before a person starts to have those flu-like symptoms, we don't think they're transmitting. And if you may recall from COVID, that was a real problem. A real difficulty in COVID is that you had to go back and think, in the days before I was sick, you know, who did I have contact with? We don't really have to do that with monkeypox in the same way. So contact tracing is the beginning of all prevention efforts with monkeypox. And then once you know who has been infected, you and who those contacts are, you first get them to stay home, and then in some places they're starting to vaccinate those people.
What vaccination?
They're vaccinating these folks with a smallpox vaccine, and the smallpox vaccine many of us have either not really had to think about or even really know about, but a large number of humans living in the world where smallpox was a problem until about 1980, have been vaccinated for smallpox. And
my mom's got the scar.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was quite a bit of immunity as a consequence. We still have smallpox vaccine in often in like national strategic stockpiles, for example, where we keep it in case some country has a smallpox isolate that they might want to weaponize, for example, for like a bioterrorism attack. The old smallpox vaccine that was used, by the way, is not the kind of one we would use now. It was a live virus vaccine. It was weakened, but it could replicate in people who had severe immunocompromise. And we would not want to use that as eagerly as we might want to use a safer virus for folks with immunocompromise. And so a new safer smallpox vaccine, and it is called Jynneos, I believe is the brand name. And Jynneos is a non-replicating live virus vaccine. That's a better candidate for using in these situations where you basically vaccinate all the contacts of somebody who is a case or all the particularly close contacts to prevent them from either developing infection or transmitting it. And ideally, you do that within 4 days of infection.
How much of the world is still getting a smallpox vaccination of some kind?
None.
Step by step, the disease was pushed back to the very last case, Ali Mao Malin.
It's not necessary to vaccinate people against smallpox anymore because it's been eradicated.
Smallpox was no more. On the 8th of May, 1980, Dr. Halfdan Mahler, Director General of the World Health Organization, signed a certificate of eradication.
So there's no point in vaccinating people broadly for a disease that's not causing a whole lot of death.
And what about treatment if you actually get the monkeypox?
So most people don't really need a particular drug directed at killing the virus or stopping its spread. Most people do fine just taking care of themselves at home, drinking lots of fluids, controlling any fever or symptoms with pain and fever medicines, and getting through it themselves that way. Most people don't require hospitalization. But are currently being hospitalized, I think, often just to prevent spread while other sort of contingencies are managed. But there are a couple of medicines that are being explored or have already been approved for use in people with this infection. One is called TPOX. It's sort of the brand name for Tecovirimat. There's some evidence from human trials in the Central African Republic that are promising. So that's a good thing. And there's also another drug called brincidofovir. And that also seems to show some efficacy treating monkeypox. But honestly, I think most of the people, if you have a healthy immune system, most people will be able to manage this as just an infection that goes away by itself, but just has some unpleasant symptoms while it's making its way through you.
Is there anyone out there right now saying we should have never stopped vaccinating people for smallpox? Because if we hadn't, this monkeypox thing wouldn't have happened?
I haven't heard that particular perspective. I have seen there was a study published well before this particular outbreak, sort of explaining how monkeypox is sort of filling a niche that smallpox previously occupied.
Oh.
Because people are no longer broadly immune to smallpox. And that's probably true. But, you know, global vaccination campaigns are costly. Once you eradicate an infection, there are a lot of other places to put the resources that you previously put towards smallpox vaccination. So whether it's other vaccination campaigns or other, you know, disease prevention campaigns.
The 10-year campaign cost $300 million. A real bargain. The world saves each year $1,000 million on vaccines and care of the sick alone.
Since 1980, when smallpox was eradicated, the amount of travel that people are able to do and that people do has changed quite a bit, has gone up quite a bit. And we're also seeing enormous changes in the border between humans and the wild animals where this disease normally circulates, right? Climate change has accelerated. Deforestation has accelerated. Conflict, although conflict has always been present, you know, at least since colonialization throughout various parts of West and Central Africa, that has been a really active dynamic over the last few decades. So all of this has brought humans in increasing contact with the reservoirs of this infection. And so that's maybe accelerated monkeypox's arrival into this niche that smallpox previously occupied.
But these trends that we're talking about, deforestation, you know, humans moving more and more into previously unoccupied territory, climate change, travel, these trends don't seem to be going anywhere. Does that mean that monkeypox is just the latest in a host of new diseases we're going to be coming into contact with?
I mean, it is the latest, but if you'll recall, there is a coronavirus that also kind of jumped species and has caused,
lest we forget,
a fair bit of havoc. So, yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, coronavirus obviously was not the first either. There are a lot of diseases that we don't often have to think about in the U.S. and in Europe. They exist, and they're a big problem in places where they circulate and have been circulating for a long time. And they are often introduced within our borders by travel. But what could contribute to their persistence is, you know, changing climates here. So, for example, think about dengue. Dengue is a disease caused by a mosquito-borne virus that generally lives in the tropics, right? You need a certain kind of mosquito to transmit dengue. And for a long time, you didn't see that mosquito in the United States. But you'd occasionally see those mosquitoes and occasionally dengue virus being transmitted by them in places like Key West or in Hawaii, rarely. And public health, thankfully, was able to control those episodes. But as we see climate conditions changing, I think there's certainly a risk that we'll start to see a little bit more of this dynamic evolving in the future.
Karen Landman is a senior reporter on health and science here at Vox and a physician and an epidemiologist. You can read her at Vox.com. Our show today wouldn't have been possible were it not for the efforts of Halima Shah and also Matthew Collette, Laura Bullard, and Paul Mounsey. It's Today Explained.
Support for Today Explained comes from Atlassian. Whether you're working from home or out of the office, every day Atlassian teams are reimagining what it means to connect and produce incredible results. Atlassian's remote-friendly software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom helps your team work effectively by connecting your entire organization in one shared digital workspace. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better, believes Atlassian. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N.com. Atlassian.